Welcome to the DC Fan Show. My name is Sean Gerber. This is a brand new podcast dedicated to the DC multiverse. In this premiere episode, I will be joined by my good friend, screenwriter, and Forbes contributor Mark Hughes to preview DC fandom. We'll be discussing the latest news, including the event being split in two, before looking at our most anticipated Hall of Heroes panels. We'll also talk about Wonder Woman 1984 and Warner Media's theatrical and streaming options for that film. Before all of that fun starts, however, I'll take a few moments to introduce myself and this show. Many of you may already know my story, but just in case, my name, once again, is Sean Gerber, and while this may be the first episode of this show, it is not my first time hosting a DC podcast. In fact, the launch of this podcast arrives in the same month as my 12th anniversary in podcasting. I hosted, co-produced, and co-created the original Batman on Film podcast back in 2008. I later launched my own podcast and website, Modern Myth Media, in March 2011, where I expanded my coverage of DC to go beyond Batman while discussing other topics like Marvel and Star Wars. I have also hosted a number of other superhero or Star Wars-themed podcasts over the years, including the Batman News podcast with my pal Andy DeGenova of Holy Batcast, Superhero News with the aforementioned Mark Hughes, Fandalorians with the late, great John Beerley, and the MCU Fan Show, formerly Marvel Studios News, with my dear friend Paul Herman. I still host the MCU Fan Show, of course, as I am a lifelong fan of both Marvel and DC. It's not DC versus Marvel for me, but DC and Marvel. But ever since leaving Superhero News last year, I haven't really had much of a platform to talk about the characters and stories I love from the DC multiverse, so I'm making my own. These are characters and stories about which I am very passionate, and I know many of you feel the same way, so I plan to celebrate DC and being DC fans on this podcast. Our primary coverage will be on films and streaming series, but our discussions will not be limited to those topics. We will talk about live-action television, animation, comics, and the broader entertainment industry as it relates to DC, Warner Media, HBO Max, and AT&T. For those of you who follow me over at the MCU Fan Show, you may be wondering if there will also be Patreon content and Discord community options for DC Fan Show. The answer is yes, but more on that after my conversation with Mark. One last note before that conversation begins, however, is to please make sure you're following Mark in the places you can. He knows his stuff and loves DC as much as anyone I know. You can follow him on Twitter at Mark Hughes Films and find his Forbes articles at Forbes.com/sites/Mark Hughes. He'll be posting his coverage from visiting the set of Wonder Woman 1984 very soon. And depending on when you're hearing this podcast, it may already be available. So make sure you visit Forbes.com/sites/Mark Hughes. Now, please enjoy this preview of DC fandom and stick around afterward for more details on how we can celebrate fandom together this Saturday, August 22nd. Mark Hughes, welcome to the first ever episode of the DC Fan Show. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me. Very happy to be here. Very happy to see the DC Fan Show.
Yeah, it's about time that we had a chance to talk about DC together while recording. We've been doing this offline for quite a while. I mean, constantly for 15 years now. but it's been a while since we've done, we've recently podcasted together, of course, on the MCU Fan Show. And now for DC launching this new podcast, I wanted to make sure that you were here for this first episode. And it's a really exciting week to be launching a new DC podcast. It's like I planned it, with DC fandom coming out this week. And I'll start, though, by the news that we just got today. So DC fandom, we're recording this on Wednesday before the event, just 3 days before the event, and it's already changed. It's already changed from one event to two events. DC fandom has been split in two. As they officially announced this morning, it's going to be DC fandom Hall of Heroes this Saturday, August 22nd, and then DC fandom Explore the Multiverse on September 12th. DC fandom is going to feature the movie and video game panels, plus several others, including some of the biggest TV shows. Explore the Multiverse is going to feature additional TV panels and some comic book panels. It's basically the panels that were listed under Watchverse on the DC fandom scheduling website. So let's first talk about, we're going to preview some of the biggest panels, Mark, but before we get into that, let's just talk about DC fandom being split in two, because as this announcement comes just 3 days before the convention, what do you make of this, and what do you make of the timing of this?
Well, I think it probably would have been good to have kind of known this beforehand, a little bit going into it, I guess. I mean, maybe there's an argument to be made that, like, oh, it's a twist and it's, you know, but I think a lot of fans were, who were going to explore the multiverse panels, so to speak, are who were going to do that this weekend are probably like, wait, what? And so there might be a lot of reshuffling going on with that. And I, you know, I'm not, I don't want to be down on it because it's exciting. And what it means is now there's going to be two full days of content instead of one full day of content. Instead of one day, it's going to be 2 days, which really, and then it's going to, you know, obviously play out. They're going to have the repeats. So there'll be a great deal of content on two separate weekends. But yeah, it would have been nice if they had, if this had been part of the announcement of fandom from the start, but it's one of those things where, you know, we're at this, here's where we are now. And, I'm going to focus on getting my schedule changed around to figure out what I'm going to watch on each weekend and, get all that adjusted for it. So,
I mean,
it was a surprise.
The timing of it means I can give them zero credit for proper planning, but I feel like, because I don't think they planned it this way. I don't think they planned to announce an event and then 3 days before the event say we're splitting it in two with the second part happening 3 weeks later than the first part. I don't think that was pre-planned, but I also don't want to be too critical of this because, well, for a couple reasons. This might have something to do with the shakeup at DC. We know that there's been a lot of overhaul, particularly within DC Comics, and that's the branch that has arguably been the most impacted by this change in DC fandom, because most of these panels that are now part of Exploring the Multiverse are comic book panels. There are television panels as well, but we see a lot of comic book panels being impacted, so maybe they needed a little extra time. But this might actually have nothing to do with the DC shakeup. This might just be coming to the realization, as late as it may be for them to come to the realization, it's still the correct call, which is that there was too much to consume within a 24-hour period. And as much as I was looking forward to it, it was also daunting to look at that schedule, because you have the ability on the DC fandom schedule site to just click plus and add everything to your schedule. And I was adding almost everything to my schedule. So when you add in the Hall of Heroes panels with the multiverse or watchverse panels, everything was overlapping, which meant needing to watch the encore editions of the panels. And it was like I was going to have to watch for 24 hours straight in order to maybe be able to see everything that I wanted to see. And while there's a part of me that says that kind of sounds like a really awesome day, I also know how that kind of stuff actually feels on the day, which is after you get several hours into it, the level of satisfaction that you might have ordinarily had watching the 18th panel of the day is not what it should have been. And it's not what it could have been. And so I think it's ultimately better. No, it doesn't speak well to the planning of the event, but ultimately the right thing is happening, because now everybody will have an opportunity to see as much of DC fandom as they want to. And it doesn't have to be a thing where, because we already know, and another great advantage to separating these things is the Hall of Heroes panels are obviously going to demand the most attention. It's about the movies, which are the biggest thing, and the biggest television series as well, and streaming with Zack Snyder's Justice League. So it's about, with those things being about the biggest panels of the day, then inevitably, the other panels were going to get lost in the shuffle. They wouldn't get the same press coverage. They wouldn't get the same attention from fans. Right. And so those panels can't make the same impact if they're going on simultaneously with the Hall of Heroes panel. So I think from a marketing and publicity perspective, this will work out better, particularly for the panels that got delayed, because now they won't be drowned out by all the big stuff happening in Hall of Heroes. They will have their own day in order to make their own impact with the audience that tunes in for those panels and the media that also tunes in to provide coverage. And one other thing that I would say about this is that I think this move highlights one of the key advantages of having a virtual con in the first place, They could not do this if this was happening in a physical space. If this was an in-person event, they would not be able to just schedule a second day 3 weeks down the line, 3 days before the main event. They would not be able to do that. But with a virtual con, you can, which is, I think, what speaks that speaks to really kind of the future of this stuff. I don't think DC fandom is one and done. I think this is going to be something that Warner Brothers carries forward. I feel like Disney is going to do, Disney and Marvel are going to do their own version of this thing with a virtual type of virtual type of convention. I think this stuff is going to be become the norm, and this highlights a huge advantage of it, which is if you decide that the event we planned is too big for one day, then even if it's just 3 days before that event, you can split it in two. And so while there might be, you could scoff at it, you could laugh at it and say that they didn't plan this correctly, that's fine, that might be true, but they also have the flexibility to make the right decision and the best decision for this experience of DC fandom and those of us as fans who are going to tune in.
Yeah, which is exactly, and they did. And, and that's, you know, ultimately the thing to keep in mind is that if to the extent that there were planning concerns, the planning concerns would be that there were, that it was bigger than they realized, that there was more interest even than they had been able to plan for, that there was a shakeup that was going to affect several of the panels, which is, you know, obviously the case, it seems at this point. And so if you, I don't think it's a bad thing to say, okay, well, in the course of the planning of this event, they came to realize it was bigger and needed its own separate day, and for everyone to make sure everyone had a chance to watch what they wanted to watch, and to make sure everyone who was participating in panels got the audience they deserved. And just the sheer fact that this is such a big thing and that no one has ever done this before means that, you know, there's got to be some room for error, and we're going to see how fast they, you know, we'll find out whether it affects the quality of the panels that had to shift to a different day. We can't say yet, but it's not going to negatively impact the Hall of Heroes panels that we see this weekend. So if in the end result is it doesn't cause any direct harm yet that we can see, and it has the all of the implication is that it will improve the timing, then yeah, I think this is one of those where the complaints about not, you know, about lack of being, you know, adequately planning or whatever gives way to the fact that, well, but it is also a first time, and it's everything is going to improve probably because of it. So, although I will add, don't anyone take that as me meaning everything is better, including the cuts at DC, because people were horribly impacted by that. It's absolutely very sad. I understand that. And I don't want to make light of that. And I think it's very unfortunate that that is a factor probably. But even without that having happened, the right thing to do was to split this into 2 days anyway. Everything is going to improve because of the splitting, despite the fact that a lot of people lost their jobs and that that was inevitably probably a factor as well.
Right. And yeah, certainly we wouldn't discount the significance of people losing their jobs. I've been laid off, and so I don't discount that. I know exactly how that feels, and I feel horribly for everyone who lost their jobs last week. But I also don't know, though, if that was a main fact. This, it could have been a factor in this. It may not have. It may have simply been a result of them looking at it and saying, we have this situation going on in-house, internally, but also there's the reality. And this was something that fans were talking about.
Exactly.
So this could have been a response to the fandom, which is that a lot of people were saying, how am I going to watch all of this? You know, so
I
much
think
of
that
this
is the primary reason.
So much of this is overlapping. I don't know if I'm going to be able to consume all of this in 24 hours. Not everybody has the luxury of just immediately dedicating a 24-hour window to their favorite comic book and superhero shows and everything. Like, they're not everybody has that kind of flexibility or availability in their life, even though it's on a Saturday. So, and even though a lot of people are stuck at home right now. So I think this ultimately is a decision that serves the best interests of the experience of DC fandom and the fans who are going to be participating in that experience. So ultimately the right thing, I think, is happening. And also, it's worth noting that the biggest, most anticipated panels are not moving. They are all still right. The Hall of Heroes stuff, particularly with the big DC movies that are coming up. Their panels are proceeding exactly as they were scheduled. So really, it's just breaking out some of the other panels that, and maybe if some of the Exploring the Multiverse or Watchverse panels, if Stargirl or Doom Patrol was your most anticipated panel, then I could certainly understand being disappointed that it's been delayed a few weeks, because not everybody's most anticipated panel is based on a movie. So I totally get that. But I also think that ultimately every panel is better served by having this stretched out over a couple of different weekends. So in looking at the biggest panels, though, Mark, we start with Wonder Woman 1984. That's going to kick off DC fandom at 10 a.m. on Saturday. It's scheduled for 25 minutes, and the official description reads as Wonder Woman 1984 stars Gal Gadot, Chris Pine, Kristen Wiig, and Pedro Pascal, and director, co-writer, producer Patty Jenkins join forces with Brazilian hosts Érico Borgo, Aline Diniz to celebrate the fans in a big way. They will answer questions from fans all over the world, talk fan art and cosplay, and reveal an all-new sneak peek at the upcoming film, plus a few more surprises. And part of that sneak peek at the film, as confirmed and as you wrote on Forbes this morning, there's going to be a brand new trailer for Wonder Woman 1984 as part of this panel. I don't know. I like how you took a guess or predicted in your Forbes article, maybe it would be in the first 5 minutes or maybe it would be at the end.
Oh, no.
Or where did
I said I didn't think it won't be in the first five minutes or the last couple of minutes, because I don't think they'll have like wrap up at the end and they'll have intro. So it probably shifts down your way. For anyone who's really particular about the precise timing, it's like, okay, there's probably a 15 minute window, maybe a 12 minute window where it'll fall.
Yeah. I mean, I'm watching the whole panel, so it doesn't matter when they drop it. If I had a preference, I would say save it as close to the end as possible, because after I see that new trailer, I don't know how much I'm going to pay attention to the rest of the panel. So, because I'll just be thinking about the trailer. And I would imagine that whatever they play during the panel, the new trailer, I think, will be everywhere. I don't think it will be exclusive to DC fandom. But what I do wonder is, will there be any other footage besides the trailer that will just be part of the Wonder Woman 1984 panel for DC fandom that will only be available for 24 hours?
Well, I'll say this. The announcement that you read earlier that mentioned a sneak peek before they had even mentioned the trailer, the fact, like, I knew about the trailer and a lot of people knew about that the trailer was coming and couldn't publicly confirm it. And because, you know, obviously we weren't supposed to say anything till a certain time, like with the set visits and stuff. So that's the timing of it. The fact that there's a trailer was a secret when they were still also saying there would be a sneak peek. Right. So I think you can pretty safely infer that there's going to be some photos shown and probably some additional footage shown, I would guess.
Yeah, I think so. I think we're going to get a decent amount of footage from this film. And I don't think I'd be surprised if it's just the trailer that I expect to be distributed widely, not just part of DC fandom.
There'll be a look at Cheetah. I think we'll see Cheetah.
That would be awesome. Yeah. And I think that it's great to finally get a look at this film. What's crazy about it is this is a movie that could have come out November of last year, was saved until June of this year so that Warner could have a summer blockbuster in 2020. And then, of course, everything's been shut down. So Wonder Woman 1984, like a lot of other movies, delayed and now currently scheduled for theatrical release in October. We're going to talk more about that as the show goes on. But just specific to this panel, I'm really excited about seeing this cast together again, because it's a reunion for Gal Gadot, Chris Pine, and Patty Jenkins, but then to see Kristen Wiig and Pedro Pascal talking about the film a little bit, which we've seen little bits and pieces of interviews with them over the past couple of years since they went and made this film. But this will probably be our longest, most significant look at the film to date. And it's the kind of thing that we would have been seeing if there was a Comic-Con and Warner Brothers was in Hall H this year, but that didn't happen. And I'm still really excited about it. I know that maybe you miss out on the experience of being in the room for those of us who probably would have been in the room in Hall H, but that's still only about 6,500 people compared to millions who have the opportunity to watch this panel on Saturday. And so I even though it's going to be in a virtual setting, I'm still really, really excited about this because I want to know more about this movie. Not that I want to know everything about this movie, but the first trailer that they put out was great. I mean, it was absolutely electric. And so the idea of getting another look at this film while hearing from the cast is just incredibly exciting. And I'm glad that it's kicking off the day on Saturday. I think it's not just because it's the next DC movie, but I think it's the right DC movie to kind of set the tone for the day.
Yeah, I agree. That's a really great point that I think Wonder Woman 1984, and it's, I think well, I don't want to get into his naming favorites, so I'll back off of the statement. I was about to say there are certain films that I think are kind of really the anchors of the day and are going to be the films that, and I think this is the film that you want to start with. This is the film that kicks off because it's a film that's surrounded by goodwill. It's, mm-hmm. you know, Wonder Woman has been a constant, and Gal Gadot's portrayal and Patty Jenkins' filmmaking have been consistent shining points that everyone, regardless of their opinions or favorites or whatever else in the DC universe, everybody loves Wonder Woman and thinks that's a great film and is eager to see the sequel. So the hype around that, or hype's not even the right word because it's accurate amount of hype.
Right.
The excitement and the thrill that people are going to get surrounding this movie, that's how you want to kick off DC fandom, I think. That's the right way. And I don't think anything else will set the mood as perfectly and get the enthusiasm up high right out the gate the way that Wonder Woman 1984 will.
Right. No, I totally agree with that. So moving a little bit forward in the day, at 11:15 a.m., there is going to be a panel called Multiverse 101, which is described as "Get schooled in this engaging refresher course on the creation of the multiverse with DC Chief Creative Officer / Publisher Jim Lee, Warner Brothers Pictures President of DC-based film production Walter Hamada, and Berlanti Productions Founder / DC TV Mega Producer Greg Berlanti." So with this panel, the reason why I wanted to highlight this is I feel like this is the type of panel where it's a wild card because it's not about a specific project. And while I understand the whole Multiverse 101 thing, I don't think this is just purely educational for the benefit of the uninitiated. I don't think it's just that. I think the fact that you have a panel called Multiverse 101 is designed to really set the table for what I think DC has enabled to, and what they uniquely have as far as being able to present live action adaptations, is this well-built out multiverse of different timelines and different continuities across film and television, live action, and even animation as well, depending on how far they want to go with this type of stuff. I think defining this from some, as well as comic books, to define this in a way where you have these three pillars, you have the comic books, you have film, and you have television, and you have leaders from those three pillars coming together with this, I kind of feel like this is a way of previewing maybe how DC is going to approach their adaptations. There's been a lot of questions about that, and maybe I'm overshooting it, I don't know. But there's been a lot of questions about how is DC going to handle continuity with respect to the DCEU versus rebooting versus a mix of those things, whatever it is. And I feel like if Marvel has the Marvel Cinematic Universe, then what DC could have and what it's increasingly looking like, as we'll talk about with the Flash panel next, is maybe DC having the first full-blown cinematic, or I'll keep the alliteration, the DC movie multiverse, although it might not just be movies. So I'm really intrigued by this panel. I don't think it's just a quick little 101. I mean, it's 30 minutes, so, or about 25 minutes. So I don't think it needs to be that long just to say, "Hi, I'm Jim Lee and I make comic books," or "Hi, I'm Walter Hamada and I make movies." I think it's about a little more than that. Or maybe a lot more.
Yeah, I absolutely. I think there's first of all, this is the multiverse, and they didn't move it to the multiverse day. They didn't move it. It's on the Hall of Heroes day, which, and I'm not implying that, like, oh, there's the better day or the worse. What I mean is that what the days are specifically about.
Correct.
And to not move this to that day means it has direct relevance, I believe, to the Hall of Heroes day. And what that tells me is either they're simply going to have each person from their respective mediums step forward and explain, here's how the multiverse works in comics. Here's how it works in our films. Here's how it works in the TV shows. And they're essentially doing a broad general description of it and talking about how great it is that DC has these things, mm-hmm. and then talking to each other about what I love about what you're doing and stuff. You could get a 30-minute panel out of that if you had to. Maybe, you know, and even it might end up being like 25 minutes to 28 minutes instead. So you could hypothetically get that out of it. But more importantly, and what I think is the case, is that there's going to be overlap, and they're going to be talking about the origins of multiverse within the comics and how they're going to move forward with the comics now, in addition to the film and TV discussion about here is how the multiverse from the comics relates to those, and these things are going to tie together. And they're going to, I believe, this is going to be where we hear more of what does this multiverse mean? Because it's setting up and prepping for what? The Flash panel,
right,
which will be talking more about, that'll be a continuation. So I think the timing is very deliberate, and I think the intent and having it on this day is very deliberate. So I think logically we can conclude this is going to be specifically about how this is going to play out and what they're envisioning for the future way these films relate.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. So after we get through Multiverse 101, the next panel after that will be introducing Flash. It's only scheduled for 10 minutes, so it's not going to be as much of a full panel as maybe we're going to get with everything else. But here's how it's described. This 101-style conversation with the Flash filmmakers Andy Muschietti and Barbara Muschietti, star Ezra Miller and screenwriter Christina Hodson, will give fans a speedy rundown on the first ever Flash feature film. So it's only 10 minutes, but there's something that's been reported on ahead of time with the idea of Michael Keaton perhaps reprising his role as Batman in this movie. If there's a time to make an official announcement for that, if they can, this is definitely the time to do that. It would be a huge bombshell announcement at DC fandom. So maybe that happens during this panel. But also, I think this is really, even though it's only 10 minutes, this is one of the more important panels of the day. Because of, let's just be real about the Flash's history. We've been through this revolving door of filmmakers who've been attached to this, creative directions that have come and gone with this movie. And so the Flash has just been in this place where, I mean, we don't even know. In so many ways, there's a valid question as to whether or not this movie is even real. So to define this as a real movie that's actually happening and actually on the way, I think that's the main mission of this panel or of this little 10-minute presentation. And then, yeah, if they can add to that, add a little bit of sizzle on top of that, or a lot, by saying that Michael Keaton will be back as Batman in this film, then that would obviously be huge. But the main thing is, I think, convincing people that this movie is finally happening.
Yeah, I agree. That's I won't go too deep into it. I'll just note that, you know, I've had comments before that I've made about my skepticism, and like, I'm still in wait and see mode, honestly, about the Flash at this point. Mm-hmm. And the reason I'm in wait and see mode is that it has had so many changes. And so, I would hope for some kind of big announcement or a guest appearance by Michael Keaton, which I suspect they would have, if they had something that big was happening, I would guess that would be announced sometime in the next couple of days if it's going to happen. But otherwise, I'm guessing that that's not happening. So I'll say I'm trying to tiptoe around this here. This is one area where I'm enthusiastic about all this. I love DC. Flash is an area where I'm hoping to see something here at DC Fandome that convinces me, as you said, that this is a real movie, because I've been watching this play out for so long, it's kind of, and maybe that's just, it's easy to become jaded, but I'm kind of like, well, I'll believe it when I know we're going to get a Flash film eventually. I just don't know which Flash film we're going to get, and I need something to convince me at this point to believe in the one that's in front of me today.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. So after the Flash, we will get the Suicide Squad. That is scheduled for 30 minutes beginning at 11:55 a.m. I guess the schedule's too tight. They couldn't just call it noon, but it's 11:55 a.m. The official description reads as, "What else would you expect from the Suicide Squad but the ultimate elimination game? First up, writer-director James Gunn takes on fan questions, then brings out Task Force X for a fast-paced, no-holds-barred squad showdown that tests every team member's squad knowledge and survival skills." So, it's James Gunn, so I think we can expect a lot of energy from this panel. I think we can expect to have a really good time with this panel. And this is also one where the amount of new information that we could get could be a fairly significant amount. I mean, we don't really know that much about this movie. Outside of a few actors, we don't even know the roles that a lot of people are playing specifically in this movie. A lot of that stuff James Gunn has not been willing to share just yet. So I figure now with DC Fandom, yeah, they're going to have fun and they're going to play games. And it kind of looks like they did from the previews we've seen, it kind of looks like they did a Zoom call, but of course they've dressed it up, which some of the panels look a lot different than that. I mean, some of the stuff like with where host Aisha Tyler is and Matt Reeves of the Batman, they're on some studio behind like video wall technology like they used on The Mandalorian is what it looks like to me. But even though this one looks like it's a little more Zoom style, they did a better job dressing it up than what we saw via Comic-Con at home last month. And also, I like the idea of playing games and just kind of having fun with the cast, because panels can be a little dry if it's just about let's all take turns saying a little bit, but also spending more of our time explaining how we're not saying anything. To actually just have a little bit of fun with the cast, but maybe give us some info. I mean, if James Gunn can confirm more of the roles that are in this movie, so it's not just rumors or various reports, but to have it be official of who some of these actors are playing, I think it would be really cool to come out of that panel with that knowledge. And even though this preview, I don't think it, going back through the description, I don't see anything that specifically teases footage. They shot this movie last year. I would be very, very surprised if we come out of this panel not having seen even a glimpse of the Suicide Squad. I think we're going to see some footage too.
Yeah, that's the big thing with this is footage. Are we going to get to see James? Are we going to get to see James Gunn's Suicide Squad? And the answer has to be yes. Of course, we're going to see footage.
Yeah,
I don't think we'll get an official teaser, but we'll get footage and we'll get some information for sure. And the thing about the games is that with this kind of a convention, when you're on stage, when you go somewhere and you're on stage and there's hundreds or thousands of people watching and cheering and stuff, it's easy to get the energy level and enthusiasm up in a way that is a little harder to do when it's just video. People are essentially like at their home or just sitting in a studio by themselves and it's not as direct. So I think the games aspect is a really fun way to get the energy level higher and to also get the audience watching's interaction level and energy level higher. You're not quite as passively watching, or not in the same way, at least, if you're just watching people talk versus watching them play a game and you're vested interest and you're surprised when they're surprised and it's funny. So kudos to whoever came up with that idea for the panel.
Yeah.
And this I can't wait to see footage from this. I'm dying to see footage from this. Yeah.
Well, you and I have been to our fair share of press conferences covering movies at junkets, and some of them are okay. Some of them are a lot better than okay. And usually when that happens, it's because the cast is just kind of having fun with each other.
Right.
And they're playing their little games and maybe going back through inside jokes that even though we're not in on, just the fact that they're laughing and having a good time with one another, that tends to play better than, than just, as I said, the tendency is, yeah, people will talk a little bit, but they'll spend so much time talking about what they're not going to talk about. You don't have, the point of this is, the point of this panel should not be, well, we're having this panel, but we can't say anything. Like, it can't, it can't be that. You've got to share something, right. But also for make up some of the time for to use up some of the time where you're maybe not going to share as much information about the film because it's still so far away, then do something fun with that time and be engaged with one another as a cast and crew, as well as engage with the fans. So I think that's a smart idea. And hopefully the game that they play with each other plays well for all of us who are watching on Saturday. So later on in the afternoon at 2:30 p.m., we get another one of the most anticipated panels of the day. And that is a panel for the Snyder Cut of Justice League, which is described as Zack Snyder fields questions from fans and a few surprise guests as he discusses his eagerly awaited upcoming cut of the 2017 feature film and the movement that made it happen. I feel like I could say this a lot, but one of the most important panels of the day, but for a different reason than Wonder Woman 1984 or the Suicide Squad or the Batman at the end of the day, is with Zack Snyder's Justice League, all of the reorganization that we talked about a little bit from a DC perspective, but the broader reorganization across the entire company at Warner Media / AT&T as the parent company, everything that we've been talking about, it's all about driving one thing, and that's HBO Max. This is the panel that is for an HBO Max exclusive on Saturday. And so I expect this to be a bombshell panel. I expect Zack Snyder, given what he's been willing to tease just on social media or Justice Con last month, I expect Zack Snyder to really bring something huge to DC fandom. And I would be shocked. I mean, I think we are going to see not just footage. I kind of expect an abundance of footage. I know that there's still stuff that has to be finished and done and everything. This is not coming to HBO Max until next year. I understand all of that. And so I understand there are practical limits on what they can show. And also it's a 25-minute panel. They're not going to show us the entire thing, but I do expect some pretty huge visuals from this to really set the tone for DC on HBO Max, because as the one HBO Max exclusive of the day, or certainly the biggest one for Hall of Heroes, this really has to be a tone setter, I think, on this day for DC fandom. So I'm really anticipating this one, and I expect to see big things from it.
Yeah, this is, like you said, this panel is exceedingly different than anything else on the panel because of what it represents, not just in terms of the content itself, but about the point in time that we are now, as well as speaking to an earlier point in time. And it really, for an event like DC Fandome, I think this panel is sort of a bridge between the previous movies and the future movies. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we can, everything that's been released up to this point versus everything that's coming in the future. There were what, 8 previous films. Mm-hmm. There's 8 films coming up that are within somehow connected one way or the other. And when you look at the amount of money that the previous ones made compared to what the future ones are expected to make, it's comparable as well. Right. The difference is the budgeting, which is where there's a significant difference. There's about a $1 billion difference comparative in the budgeting of what came before versus what comes mm-hmm. now. And it's interesting to think that if they had released just the Snyder Cut originally, we'd still be getting almost everything we're getting right now. The Batman would be a different version of the Batman, but everything else on the schedule would be essentially the same. So this is going to be monumental because it's about the future of DC on HBO Max and what's possible with DC on HBO Max and with this notion of the multiverse, which is going to be addressed in a panel earlier. So I expect of all the other things I think will come out of this panel, which includes footage, we're going to get footage that we haven't seen yet. In addition to that, I think the relevance of the multiverse panel and movies and TV, I think will be addressed in a relative way within the Zack Snyder panel, because I think we might find out if there's anything tying into if Zack Snyder's Justice League is going to lead to something else, if we're going to see additional content for HBO Max, for example. So I expect that could be one of the bombshells that we get besides additional footage surprise.
Yeah, completely agree. So the next panel, or I don't know, it's not the very next one. I think there's a quick thing in between, but a little bit after that at 3:10 p.m., we get the Black Adam presentation. It's scheduled for 15 minutes and it's described as star of the first ever Black Adam feature film, Dwayne Johnson, sets the stage for the story and tone of the new movie with a fans first Q&A and a few surprises. So with this one, it's 15 minutes as opposed to 10 for The Flash. Now, of course, that could be just Dwayne Johnson filling up time on the microphone, as he's very good at doing. So I don't know how much we're going to get from this, but this is not quite in the same territory as Flash, but close to it, in that it's something that's been talked about for a very long time with very little meaningful forward movement. Although now it seems like things are starting to ramp up for this film and it's going to transition from alleged movie status to actual movie status. And so it would be great to get some updates and really just seeing a commitment to this project. And I think one of the best ways to demonstrate that commitment is to make some more announcements on this with various casting. I mean, there's been different reports of additions to this cast, so maybe confirm some of the things that are out there for this movie, but really just get people excited for it. And I think if they can also, in terms of setting the stage for the story and the tone, if they could maybe start to build up the event-like nature of this that sets up a panel that's happening a little while after this, maybe start to tease more specifically of how this maybe incorporates into the Shazam franchise.
Yeah, this is, I'm very interested to see what we find out in this panel, because there hasn't been a whole lot of information, and I'm looking from this panel, I'm looking to see if there's anything significant and substantive coming from it. Now, I think the fact that Johnson is going to be there and that they're doing the panel means, to me, now I'm taking it a lot more seriously as a project that this is going to happen, or they're really going to try to make this happen. Now, is it possible that this is going to end up being a HBO Max movie or an HBO Max series, perhaps? I don't know. I'm spitballing, just in case anyone listening thinks that I'm like hinting at something. If that turns out to be the case, it is not because I heard anything about that at all. I'll say it's, you know, obviously we've all heard various things about the potential for DCEU movies that are more overtly connected to the previous, you know, renditions continuing possibly in HBO Max form. So there's still, so I'm kind of, there's the part of me that's expecting and waiting for that to be part of some of these announcements outside of just the Snyder cut panel itself. So, and this is one of the movies that if there was something that might potentially do that, maybe this would be one, since it's a project that I've kind of been like, I don't know if that's ever going to happen while I'm alive or not. So I'll be very interested to see this. And if Johnson really, you know, if he confirms like this thing's moving now, we've got this, this is happening, then it'll be welcome news for sure. Because I love the Shazam movie and Johnson's great and he'd be incredible as Black Adam.
So a little bit later on in the afternoon, we will have a couple of panels for movies that are already out or have already been released and are already available at home. But I like that these exist. So Aquaman will be at 4:05. It's for 10 minutes. And the description is Aquaman director James Wan and King Orm himself, Patrick Wilson, take a deep dive into the world of Atlantis that Wan created, revealing their favorite behind-the-scenes moments from the largest DC movie ever. So I like that. I know you look at that panel and you could just say, well, we've already seen Aquaman. They can't really reveal anything from Aquaman. And whatever they show behind the scenes, maybe it's stuff that you already saw on the Blu-ray. I don't really know if there will be new information specific to Aquaman. I would assume there should be at least a little bit, but I like this. This is something that doesn't happen at Comic-Con. I know it's only 10 minutes, but this is something that doesn't happen in San Diego that is happening with DC fandom, where everything with conventions tends to be about, because it's, and I understand the reasons for it. It's marketing, it's promotion. It's about selling stuff you have coming up, not selling stuff you've already sold to everyone. So I understand the function of these things is to look forward. But I also like that if we're going to say that this is also a celebration of being a DC fan, then we should celebrate the stuff that we already know we like. And there are other panels about that. I know that we're not really hitting on them in this preview show. I know there are some things that are celebrating more of the legacy of DC. There's a Wonder Woman 80th anniversary panel that's going to be part of Hall of Heroes, although I think that's only a 5-minute thing. But so there are some things that are looking at the history, the legacy of DC. But I also think it's really cool to be doing that for Aquaman because I feel like there's value in that for us as fans. And then, of course, the promotion can still be part of it. At the very end of this 10 minutes, James Wan can tease something about Aquaman 2. And I wouldn't be shocked at all if he throws in a little something for Aquaman 2.
Yeah, I assume he's going to do that. That there'll be some mention of Aquaman 2. And I like this panel as well because I love the Aquaman film and I think it's gorgeous. And I'd be thrilled to find out that Patrick Wilson was going to do like an Orm miniseries on HBO Max set in Atlantis. That would be pretty badass, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can say
that. You can. Go for it. You're good.
Badass. It would be really cool if they announced that. But even without that, a look at Aquaman and just seeing them involved in it. And I like both of them. So, yeah, I look forward to this very much. And we will also get probably some information, I would think.
Similar to Aquaman is looking back on a recent DC release, we have Shazam at 4:40, another 10-minute presentation. And this is described as Zach Levi and the cast can't tell you blank, sworn to secrecy on the new script for their upcoming movie. Zach and a few of his Shazam castmates talk with the Philippines' number one fan, Gino Quiamor, about what the next movie might be about, while commenting on everything from panels to the other Zach's cut. And even having a few surprise guests drop in. So similar to Aquaman, with a look back on the previous film a little bit, but clearly they're going to say something here because this is all about teasing how they can't say anything, but they're being interviewed by a number one fan and they're going to talk about what the next movie might be about. So this all feels like the setup for something to accidentally slip, air quotes, as they reveal some information about Shazam 2. Not necessarily a massive revelation, but similar to James Wan with Aquaman, as I expect him to reveal something about Aquaman 2, I think we'll walk away with this with at least some additional information about the Shazam sequel.
I'm going to make a bold prediction here. I'm going to go ahead and do it. I think there is going to be an announcement, and I think I'm guessing the announcement will be that Henry Cavill is going to be in the second movie. I think he may pop up. Or alternately, no, I won't do an alternately. I think that's what it is. And I'm not saying it's not because of anything I've heard. It's just, I just have a gut feeling there's been a lot of buzz constantly about this. And then Cavill being part of Zack Snyder's event in the announcement of the Snyder Cut on HBO Max. I suspect, there were moves being made and everything. So I think maybe that's what's going to happen. Maybe Cavill's going to be in that. Maybe Cavill will pop in even and come in on the call as a surprise guest or something. I don't know. Maybe he'll show up at the Black. Maybe I'm wrong. It's Black Adam. But that's my guess. I think Superman, Henry Cavill will be mentioned as being part of Shazam 2.
Yeah, I thought maybe your bold prediction would be that Shazam 2 was going to be exclusive to HBO Max, which could happen, but the Henry Cavill announcement would be much, much bigger. And also,
maybe both.
Yeah, well, I would still, even if Shazam is on, or the sequel is on HBO Max, I'd also love to have an option to watch it on a big screen. But we'll talk more about that in just a bit. So the last big panel of the day is The Batman at 5:30. It's a half-hour panel. And it's described as the Batman filmmaker Matt Reeves joins host and self-professed fangirl Aisha Tyler for a discussion of the upcoming film with a surprise or two for the fans. And in addition to this description, Matt Reeves was part of the DC Fandom trailer that they released this morning. And he said that he wouldn't have shown up without bringing footage from the movie.
Right.
So we are going to see the first ever footage from the Batman. the first ever official footage besides like the tease of the suit that Matt Reeves put out. This is going to be our best look at the Batman so far. And this is something that I am eagerly anticipating. I love that this whole day is bookended by Wonder Woman 1984 and the Batman. And to have a look at this movie, I mean, Matt Reeves is somebody that you and I are both very, very excited about, as far as, you know, you were the first person I know of who was talking about Matt Reeves directing a Batman movie one day. And Matt Reeves was definitely my next choice once we knew that Ben Affleck was no longer going to direct a Batman movie. I wanted it to be Matt Reeves. And of course, things have gone in other directions as well with different casting with Robert Pattinson. But that's a casting choice I'm really excited about, as well as the potential 0 year influence on this story, as well as a lot of the other casting that we have on this. There's a lot of great pieces to this movie. It's just a matter of us finally seeing exactly how do all those pieces come together, which is, I mean, it's never a bad place to start with just a whole lot of talent. It's usually not bad to start that way, but you also want to make sure it comes together in a way that really clicks. And I expect it to, and I expect to see some of that happening in the footage we get from the Batman. But I'm just really excited to see what the tone of this movie is going to look like, what the overall setting is, because I never go off of, I know that there's tons of set photos and little videos that have come out. I always say, you know, whether that's to myself or on a podcast, never put too much stock in that. You don't know what they're actually doing with that footage. You don't know what it's going to look like in their cameras and what it's going to look like with color correction and everything else that they're going to do with these movies. You can't just go by that. It's about seeing the finished footage, and to get some of that during DC fandom is going to be really, really exciting.
You and I, this is how we met, was over Batman movies.
Yeah.
And this is another one. And there's nothing I can say I haven't said before about how much I love Matt Reeves movies and how much I wanted him to make a Batman movie, and it's happening. So I'm a very lucky fan that I tend to get everything that I want. I tend to get from DC movies and Marvel movies, and it's amazing to feel that way. But they pretty consistently deliver what I personally enjoy and like. And this day for me, Wonder Woman, Zack Snyder's Justice League, the Suicide Squad, and the Batman are the four, which is what I was going to say earlier. And I don't mean any offense to the other panels and films. I'm excited for all
sure.
of it, but those are the four movies that not just stand out to me from fandom. Those are four of the films I most anticipate and that I know about that are ever being made in the future from anyone. And this Batman movie, we're going to get footage. We all kind of knew and suspected that anyway, and then got it confirmed yesterday. And it was exceedingly exciting to know we are going to get real footage from a new Batman movie. This is the new cinematic Batman. We all loved Affleck. Would have been great to see him in it. He's not there anymore. This is the new Batman. We've got to be excited for this.
Right.
I suspect this is the Batman who's going to end up being part of the newly put together multiverse. Once the Flash movie is done reassembling
right.
everything, I think we'll see this Batman. I do now believe we'll see this Batman with Wonder Woman and Aquaman and Superman. I think that they're going to do that. You know, it's no big surprise there. Plenty of people thought it.
Right.
I've been wondering. I don't think they're going to rush to do it. I don't know that they'll mention that at this time, but we're going to see it. At this fandom, we're going to see these movies all together for the first time, and we're going to see how it all looks together and how it feels. And my suspicion is it's going to feel pretty freaking great.
Yeah, I think so too. And of course, yeah, Batman is a character that brought us together. It's a character that got me into podcasting. Batman is a character in a world that always has my attention and my anticipation when there's something new on the way. And I'm really excited about this new era. And I'm also excited that, you know, I feel like while there maybe was some resistance to the transition with Ben Affleck, you know, not carrying forward in the way that a lot of us anticipated that he would when he was first cast, there's no question that a lot of those things that we thought were going to happen did not happen. And maybe but none of that is Matt Reeves' fault, and none of that is Robert Pattinson's fault. So it shouldn't be held against them, which I think most fans know and understand by now. And also, it's really important to mention for Ben Affleck that This was also something that he wanted for himself and that he felt was necessary for himself to step away. And it's really important to respect that. And I'm also happy that he's moving on. He's got another director project that got announced over the past month. So I'm happy that Ben Affleck is continuing on with his career. And we now have this new era for Batman as led by Matt Reeves and Robert Pattinson. And to finally have a look at that, it will be, it could be the biggest moment for me. It might end up being the most exciting moment of DC fandom for me. I don't know. Normally I would say it's Batman, so that's a given, but I don't know because that first Wonder Woman 1984 trailer was epic. So I expect the next one to be equally as epic, if not more so. And then, yeah, the first look at Suicide Squad, Zack Snyder's Justice League. I don't know what is ultimately going to be the best panel of the day. There are a lot of strong competitors in the field, but it doesn't really matter because anytime that stuff happens, the biggest winner is us, the fans, because we get to see all of it and we get to look forward to all of these movies that more often than not wind up delivering. So I'm really excited about what we're going to get with DC fandom. And there are other panels. I know we just highlighted some of the bigger ones that we are anticipating, but I know there's a lot of anticipation around the Warner Brothers Montreal Games announcement at 10:25 a.m., the Suicide Squad Killed the Justice League video game panel at 5:10 p.m. So there are other great panels for DC fandom Hall of Heroes on Saturday. And I think it's really great that we have that, but it all just goes back to what we were talking about before we started breaking down these panels one by one, which is, think of the day we just described and now try and add a whole other day's worth of panels onto the same day. Doesn't really work that great. Doesn't really work that great.
Having talked about it, it does. It's like, yikes.
Yeah. Having gone through this list, and this wasn't even the entire Hall of Heroes slate. We just highlighted some panels here. So seeing all of this and knowing that there's more still on the schedule for Hall of Heroes, it was unquestionably the right call to break things out into a separate day, which means we will have the opportunity to consume all those panels and react to those panels separately from what we're going to talk about and cover from Hall of Heroes. So the last thing that I want to shift to, though, I want to bring it back to Wonder Woman 1984, because in your article today at Forbes, as you were talking about and confirming the Wonder Woman trailer set for Saturday, you also mentioned, I know you also have a set visit article coming up for Wonder Woman 1984. We'll save that for Forbes.
Yes.
That's going to be coming up. So make sure you're checking out forbes.com/site/Mark Hughes or following at Mark Hughes Films on Twitter, so you know when his set visit article is out there. But there was something else you mentioned on your Forbes article today about Wonder Woman 1984, about premium video on demand. And I think this is a big question that's out there across the entire industry. We know Warner Brothers isn't going that direction as of right now with Tenet, but Wonder Woman is looming with an October 2nd release date and, you know, about a month and a half from Saturday's panel. And the movie market, I don't know how much really changes domestically between now and October 2nd. And, you know, I looked at, on the Marvel side of things, not MCU, but just Marvel license, the last holdover of the Marvel Fox era with New Mutants. And I was just looking at theaters with tickets going on sale. And it's like, well, there's no theaters in LA, New York, San Francisco that can have this movie. And it feels like such a muted experience with that film. And so with Wonder Woman, I don't really know that theaters can be the exclusive, you know, the exclusive option for Wonder Woman. And so you raising the issue of VOD, I thought was, you know, of course, very relevant. And I don't think that type of stuff can, well, as you and I both agree, you can't dismiss that as an option at this point.
Right. I'll be very honest here. It's, you know, Wonder Woman is supposed to hit theaters in 44 days. And I'm not going to get into politics, but I look around this country right now and I don't see a scenario where in 44 days theaters are opened for a blockbuster wide release, or where that happens in a safe manner. I just don't think so. And I also know that October 2nd is not very long after Mulan, is going to hit VOD. And it's in fact just the right amount of time after it. It gives you time to make an adjustment and say, oh, Mulan made $300 million. maybe VOD and maybe POVOD is a valid option after all, because there are markets legitimately, and I recognize this, overseas in international markets, there are territories where theaters are operating relatively safely because those places took, you know, steps and they got mostly eradicated coronavirus, and you can pretty safely go, and you're more likely to get E. coli from something you get at the snack bar at the movie theater than you are to get COVID in some of those places. So there'll be some the international opening, but the idea of an international opening coupled with a domestic VOD option, to me, it's a no-brainer. The only reason that I think it is a different decision for Warner than it is for Disney is frankly because right now the VOD option that Disney has by putting it on their subscription service,
right,
they have access to, at this point, about 70 million or so subscribers, whereas HBO Max has less than 5 million subscribers. Now, you can lump in the HBO Go and the HBO regular subscribers, but that's not the same as a platform for the VOD launch.
Right.
And I think it complicates that equation. But at the end of the day, if they just say to heck with it, we'll go with the traditional one and we'll tell them, we will do this if, as digital distributors, if all of the traditional ones agree, we want to negotiate the price and the licensing fee, but we're going to do this with whoever will come in with the lowest bid for us, and you'll get exclusive VOD, we'll release across with you as well as on our own platforms. I think there's a way to do that. And I think there's a way to make a shit ton of money doing it.
Right.
And I think when everybody sees, when Disney proof of concept works out and Black Widow ends up being a VOD release, as I expect as well, and as I know, you know, we both think that's going to happen. And I think with Wonder Woman, I don't think it's a given because of the different consideration and subscription service and the licensing fee to the digital distributing approach. But I think it's pretty good odds that's I just don't see how it's even an option unless they're willing to literally say we will hold it again and delay it until next year. So who knows? Perhaps at DC Fandom, we might even see them address this. They might give us an update and say, look, here's what we expect. If theaters are opened and it's safe, we're going ahead as planned. We recognize that come September, we're going to have to look at this and just make a decision. And in that case, if we don't have a choice, we will either delay or we'll go to video on demand. I think that it would be wise of them to address that rather than just leaving it out there, because I feel like it's kind of been an elephant in the room. And I appreciate that all studios have to deal with the investor issue. That if you announce right now that, no, we have this big movie that we put this money into, we're going video on demand, the investors aren't there yet, and it causes an artificial panic, and it can affect stock prices, it can affect investment in future films. Yeah. They're holding everybody's hand, walking them toward it. That's what I think is happening here, and I think it's going to lead to a video on demand, likely video on demand mixed with limited distribution, international distribution release for Wonder Woman 1984. That's my guess of what's going to happen.
It's going to be really interesting to see what happens and if it gets addressed at all during the panel with DC Fandom, because certainly there's nothing really exciting about showing everybody a new trailer. That part's exciting, but then saying, oh, by the way, the movie is delayed again indefinitely. But there's also that elephant in the room of, if you just keep saying October 2nd, how many people will really believe that and have not just believe it, but have confidence in it? And that's where it's a little tough. And as far as appeasing investors, it's worth noting that after Disney announced their plan to have premier access with Mulan on Disney Plus, their stock price went up, not down. So I think what investors want to see is stability from these companies. And there's not a whole lot of stability in movie theaters right now. That's not a judgment. That's just an acknowledgement of the situation being where things are at right now in the industry.
And I'll make it a judgment. They did piss poor planning and they haven't been facing up to reality, and they need to, because it's affecting their bottom line, and they're going to wreck their industry if they don't get realistic about it. I mean, honestly, which is why I think they will. I think the fact that their survival is going to come down to it is going to force them to adapt. It always has in the past, and it's saved them every time, and they've evolved from it and come out the other side better and stronger. So Hopefully that'll happen again.
I think there will need to be some sort of hybrid kind of tailored solution for Wonder Woman 1984, aside from the obvious option of just delay it or put it in theaters on October 2nd and the hell with it, see what happens. Sure, you could do that. But I feel like that's a waste of this film to just see what happens and also just continue to delay it indefinitely. And I want to point out really quickly, because we threw this qualifier out when we talked about this with Mulan and Black Widow on the MCU fan show, but just for anybody who didn't hear that, just to say, this is not about how badly we do or don't want to see these movies in theaters. We want to see these movies in theaters. I want to watch Wonder Woman 1984 in a movie theater as badly as the first Wonder Woman movie, because seeing No Man's Land on a giant screen the first time I saw Wonder Woman was a phenomenal experience that I will never forget, seeing that iconic moment, one of the most iconic moments in the history of the entire genre, seeing that on the big screen. Of course I want to see the sequel on the big screen, but we're dealing with we have to look at what our options are right now. It's not all based on what we want under ideal conditions. We don't have ideal conditions. So in looking at what's available to the companies, what's available, the studios, the theaters, what's available to us as consumers, I'm not against the idea of Wonder Woman 1984 being released via video on demand. I'm actually for that. And I think it's probably the best thing for that movie, as well as the overall health of DC, AT&T, Warner Media. And then I think it's, and also, hey, the public, it's the best thing to provide an option to go VOD. And it's not necessarily saying do the exact same thing that Disney did, because Disney is uniquely suited to be able to do this by making Mulan exclusive to Disney Plus subscribers. Disney still had a subscriber base of as of August 3rd, 60.5 million subscribers that would be their base for getting purchases for Mulan. With HBO, I know they can claim 36 million or whatever it is for HBO Max, but that's counting HBO Go, HBO Now, and HBO cable subscribers, most of whom have not actually signed on to HBO Max. So it's not quite the same thing, but then again,
and it's not on Roku and some of the, you know, the fact that it's not on some of the biggest, most widely used distribution.
Exactly.
It's the primary operating system on the most widely sold and owned televisions in the United States.
It's going
and
to be
not there.
Yeah.
That's a huge issue. That's a huge problem.
Yeah. And that's why they can't really scale up with quite that same exclusivity. I wouldn't recommend they make Wonder Woman 1984 exclusive to HBO Max, unless they are announcing a deal that they are going to be on Roku and Amazon Fire Stick at the same time, then maybe it's worth it to try and get more people who have HBO to actually use their HBO Max account, and then also get new HBO Max subscribers. So I could understand that, but if you really want to maximize the revenue of Wonder Woman 1984, it's a tailored solution where it's available in international markets that are open. Wonder Woman 1984 plays in theaters. If it's a domestic market where theaters are closed, it's available via video. You can make it available via video on demand and tell theaters in the United States, if you're open, you can play it, but you're not going to get an exclusive window out of this. It's going to be available via premium video on demand at the same time. It's day and date for this one movie, case by case basis. You can take it or leave it. Does anybody really think that movie theaters are going to reject the opportunity to play Wonder Woman 1984 on the big screen just because it's also available on video on demand? I don't think they can afford to do that. Even if they want to be prideful about it, which would not be smart business, they can't even afford to be prideful about it. So they would take the movie. And so if you provide an option where it's safe to do so, to see the movie on the big screen, okay, great. And for anyone else, or even if the movie theater is open, but you don't feel safe, you want to watch the movie at home, you have that option as well. Just give people the choice so they can see the movie. And I don't think that you and I both believe a lot more in premium video on demand than a lot of other people who talk about and write about and discuss this stuff. I think that Wonder Woman 1984, with a mixed solution of combining theaters and video and premium video on demand, has an opportunity to be wildly successful. And you could do that for a couple of months, and then in time for the holiday season, maybe that's when you have Wonder Woman 1984. You hit the fast forward button on making it available on HBO Max to really drive subscribers. Because I still feel like finding some way to incorporate HBO Max into this is also smart, because everything AT&T is doing right now in Warner Media with this reorganization, it's all about driving HBO Max. Yep. And so a huge thing that could start driving more people to HBO Max would be this highly anticipated movie. So yes, there are drawbacks and there are offsets for not being able to see the movie exactly the way we would want to see it in exactly the environment that we would want to see it. But the most important thing is seeing the movie. And right. Anything that allows us to be able to do that safely is something that I'm going to be on board with. And so I hope that one way or another, we still have the option to see Wonder Woman 1984 on October 2nd.
Yeah. I would say that the smart move would be for them to make a deal to get on Roku and Fire Stick ASAP, which I'm sure they're working on, but expedite that. It has to be done. Make it happen now. And then with the VOD release, they could do a general, they don't have the subscriber base, but they could do a general VOD release. And then also, if you're a subscriber to HBO Max, then you get it. Get it at a discount, and it's cheaper.
Right.
To encourage people to, it may not be cause a rush to subscribe. You know, I expect we're going to see a big uptick in subscriptions for Disney Plus, for example, around Mulan, and then again around Black Widow. I don't think HBO Max would get as many if the movie was also available on video on demand elsewhere.
Right.
But it can still be a boost for them. And especially if they're also then going to make Tenet available soon on their service for VOD as well, which they need to, you know, consider that as well, obviously, then you've got that. Then people who subscribe for one or other of those movies will probably also, well, you know what, if I subscribe at the right time, I'm going to get both of those movies. I may as well do it. And you'll get it. I think you'll see a kind of uptick. So I think that's the scenario. But they've got to get on Roku. They've got to get on Fire Stick. They can't fail to be or fail to exist on the most popular TVs in the country. That would be insane. I would say, do that. You're gonna make plenty of money out of it. That's really, I guess, the question is, how confident they are that they can pull the kind of money they need to pull if the movie is going to be that popular. And the answer is, we're all locked in our house. Yes, we're all going to buy it.
Right.
That's the answer. And I think that pretty well sums it up as succinctly as it needs to be summed up.
Absolutely. I think that whatever they set the price at for Wonder Woman 1984, I don't even want to say how much I would pay because I don't want them to set the price there. I'd rather save myself money by not admitting how much I would pay, but they could charge a fairly decent rate. And it could be, I'll put it this way, they could charge a lot more than they did for Scoob, and I will pay for Wonder Woman 1984 and be happy to do it. So
yeah, no knock on Trolls sequel, but I'm sorry, I think it'll outsell Trolls.
Yeah, exactly.
And at a higher, you get higher price point, and it'll still outsell it.
Absolutely. So I don't know what they're ultimately going to decide to do, but I kind of hope we get a little info on that. Although I could see that being set aside, and they still just say October 2nd during DC Fandome, just because it's still maybe a little early before they want to make a final decision on that. Before they want to publicly commit to a different type of distribution strategy for the film. So it might be a little too early for us to get that at DC Fandome. So maybe we'll wait a little bit longer. But I'll be surprised if it just comes out in theaters on October 2nd without anything relating to a premium video on demand release, whether that's day and date or a shortened theatrical window or something. There's going to have to be some balance that Warner Brothers will need to find with that film. And I don't expect just another indefinite delay. There will be some sort of solution that involves premium video on demand. It's just a matter of what exactly that entails,
right,
which we will, I think, find out in the weeks to come. But before we get to that, we have DC Fandome, starting with Wonder Woman 1984 and that panel at 10 a.m., which I just cannot wait for. And it's going to be a busy day, and I'm glad they saved a lot for a few Saturdays from now on September 12th with Exploring the Multiverse. So that's going to be a lot of fun, but it all starts with DC Fandom at 10 a.m. And of course, you're going to hear us talking about it on the DC Fan Show quite a lot, because we expect to have a lot to talk about once DC Fandom Hall of Heroes is behind us at the end of the day on Saturday. But Mark, thank you so much for joining me for this first episode.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited for this, for the fandom, obviously. I'm excited for the launch of your DC podcast. I've been waiting for you to have a DC podcast too. I love Marvel. I love DC. So I'm glad to see it. And I'm very honored that you invited me to be your first guest on the show. And I'll give you a little taste. If you want one little bit, tidbit, Wonder Woman set visit. You're all going to be amazed when you see some of the practical sets they built. You're going to see things that you think are CGI, and then you'll see the behind the scenes footage and be like, holy shit, they built that.
I can't wait. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Thank you for having me.
My thanks again to Mark Hughes for joining me on this premiere episode. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Mark Hughes Films, and keep an eye out for his Wonder Woman 1984 set visit article and eventual DC fandom coverage at Forbes.com/sites/Mark Hughes. As mentioned at the top of the show, Patreon content for DC Fan Show is on the way. My Patreon is available at patreon.com/Sean Gerber, SEANGERBER. That Patreon will house exclusive podcasts for MCU Fan Show and DC Fan Show. If you're only interested in exclusive podcasts related to DC, there will be DC-specific tiers available. There will also be MCU-specific tiers available. But for those who love Marvel and DC and want exclusive podcasts related to both DC and the MCU, there will be bundled tiers available as well. As of this recording, there is only going to be one DC Fan Show specific tier available just for right now. The other tiers are on the way, but they will be posted later, as exclusive podcasts related to DC Fan Show will not begin until September. For now, there is a tier that offers access to the DC Fan Show channels on our Patreon exclusive Discord. I'm going to be checking in throughout the day on Saturday, August 22nd, and hosting a voice chat following the conclusion of the Batman panel on that Discord this Saturday, August 22nd, after we've watched all of these Hall of Heroes panels at DC Fandom, or as many as you care to watch. And so that voice chat session and video, if it's available, we'll also do video, but that voice chat session should begin around 6 p.m. Pacific time, because the Batman panel is scheduled for 5:30 p.m. Pacific time. It's scheduled to run a half hour, which means it should be done around 6 p.m. Pacific time, but I'll just say that time is approximate for now, depending on whether the Batman panel starts and ends on time. Now, the Discord community that I manage, it's a friendly place where fellow fans welcome one another and share their passions while treating one another with kindness and respect. That is the reputation and expectation of the community that we have over there. So for more information or to sign up for the Patreon and Discord, please visit patreon.com/Sean Gerber. That's SEANGERBER. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Mr. Sean Gerber. Thank you all very much for listening to this first episode of DC Fan Show. My name, once again, is Sean Gerber. Enjoy DC Fandom, and I hope to see or hear from you on Saturday.